Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Guys, welcome back.
Uh-oh. Did we take a break?
Well, you know, about a week.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's been a long time. A week is like an eternity without you guys.
You know, because of the yearning. The yearning.
Also that's the urinating. I thought that's what you said at first, and I was very confused. Yearning makes a lot more sense.
I tell you what.
I don't know. At our age, urinating makes a lot of sense, too.
Yeah. Urinating happens a lot more often than yearning at our age.
The wife was sick this week, so she you know, kicked me out of the marriage bed and sent me down the hall to the guest room to sleep. So it was me and the two boy dogs down in the guest room for a couple of nights this week. And first, you know, that's a whole lot of penises in one bed. just saying.
Did it remind you of your old Fear the Con days?
Worse, it reminded me of Gen Con, you know. It was hilarious because, you know, we've got a very tall bed in the master bedroom. And, you know, a normal height bed in the guest room. So my dachshund's just able to happily get up there. And so when I returned to the master bedroom yesterday, he was not happy because he had gotten used to, you know, being up in the bed. He was, you know, he wanted up. Just saying.
Oh, I'm glad you guys figured it out. So hold on, because you have a girl dog. So does the girl dog stay with mom?
Alice stayed with Suzanne, and I.
Oh my God! You really? They're dogs, and you really? They're like, you know, boys stay here, girls go here.
Uh huh.
That's funny. Yep.
That's how it went. That's how
my animals are all super unhappy this week because. So getting a new couch was supposed to actually have it delivered this week, but there was a delivery issue. So the old couch and the old recliner. Those were all hauled away on Thursday. So the living room right now has a couple of folding chairs, and I brought in one of the benches from outside.
God, that's funny.
The dogs are used to, you know, lay it on a couch that's not there.
Lounging about. Yeah.
The cat loves hiding behind the couch. They just are completely lost in the living room right now, and none of them are happy.
That has got to be spectacularly uncomfortable.
Oh, it is. It very much is. And when I read that Spider-Man Noir came out, I actually thought about trying to push through and watch it. And then I realized, no, I'm going to wait until I have a comfy couch to watch it on. Because I don't want to watch it on a folding chair.
That's hilarious. See, that wouldn't be too bad for me because, you know, most of my, you know, patio furniture is nicer than the furniture I have inside. That would actually be fairly comfortable.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're still figuring things out here in puppy land. So,
And so I think we're all ready for a Murphy and Meadow update, Paul.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's been since I last spoke to you, I've spent a couple $100 on netting and plastic fencing because, like I mentioned last week, the slats of our fence are about puppy width apart.
Right.
Covered those up with netting. Now they can't get through it. So instead, they just stick their heads through the bottom of it. I tried puppy bumpers. That was the discussion on last week's podcast. I don't know if it was before or while we were on the mics. Puppy bumpers, you know, they slipped that shit right off. Literally hopped on their back, whipped their paws behind it, threw it off. Or the other dog just tore it off of the other one. That lasted five seconds.
If I'm remembering costs appropriately, it's $60-$70 and puppy bumpers just, you know, strewn in the yard.
Yeah. Just strewn in the yard. Yeah. Well, thankfully they were only 3 seconds used, so I'm going to return them to Amazon. gently used. There may be a bite in one of them. Uh-huh. So instead I got little yard or like garden fencing and put that at the bottom of the gates. It has stopped them. You know, for those of you who remember the first Jurassic Park, there's a scene where I think it was Samuel Jackson's character refers to the velociraptors and how smart they are and how they've been testing different areas of the fence, the electrified fence, for weaknesses. That is what puppies do.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember Samuel L. Jackson being in Jurassic Park, Paul.
Yeah, he was in the first one. And he was like the computer guy. He was the one whose arm gets torn off by the raptors. Yeah. But
I think that he said something like, "I'm tired of all these motherfucking velociraptors in this motherfucking amusement." I think that was.
I believe that was something he said. Yeah, that was. Yeah. That was on the edit. That was in the extended edition.
That's right. That's
right. Yeah, but that's what puppies are. You know, you cover one thing, they just go for another thing. They love tearing up sod.
They are chaos engines. They are destruction machines.
Mm-hmm.
But
I would say every day, I'm going to say this, not that anyone who listens to this podcast cares. They're like, shut up and give me comics. Mm-hmm. They slept 7 straight hours last night. Almost 8, I would say. Uh-huh. Almost 8. They slept from like 10 to 5:45 last night. And I was like, the hell? this is amazing. As online has told me, the path is not linear. I know, mm-hmm, that was the exception, not the rule right now. But it was great. I'm well rested and ready to discuss things. Ready to talk about all the TV shows I've been watching lately, which is not much.
Admittedly. Because you can't go anywhere. You're watching TV because you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we did start a couple of new shows this week. I started watching Widow's Bay on Apple.
God, it's so good.
It's so good. Yeah. And if you're not familiar with it,
the best thing. It is so good. Go ahead.
The way I would describe it to those who are unfamiliar with it, because it's not like it's well advertised unless you just happen to be watching an Apple show that advertises it before it, is that I would kind of describe it as Fargo meets Stephen King.
I think that's fair.
So it is a New England town.
It's the best Stephen King show that was never released in the 80s.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it is about this sleepy town with this supernatural secret, this cursed history. That happens to be filled with kind of these quirky residents, not quirky in like The Office kind of way, quirky, mm-hmm, more in a Fargo way, right? Like there's a lot of humor in the show, but it's humor within the context of this overall feeling of dread, not humor like comedy.
Yeah.
But it is extremely well acted and produced. It's kind of a sleeper for me. It is, I think we're only four episodes in. As far as releases, I could be wrong on that, but it's not all out yet.
Yeah, no, I think you're about 8 episodes in. So, it's 8 this week.
Okay. Well, I guess it may all be out then. I don't know.
Yeah. No, they're dropping it weekly. They dropped 2 episodes this week because one of them was out of continuity. And I think that it wasn't one of those like, oh, faith in this episode, but, you know, it just wouldn't be as satisfying without the episode that comes right after. So, but I mean, every episode's been a banger in my opinion.
I will say I've just started it. I've only seen the first episode, but I'm only one in and I was like hooked. I'm like hooked immediately.
Matt Reese is one of my favorite actors and he is phenomenal in this, you know, and he's so important to this show because, you know, number one, he's the skeptic. And, you know, the way he responds to the various horrors is super important. And Paul, because you're only one episode in, I won't spoil anything. I'll wait till you've moved further along. But I just freaking love this show. It is so much fun. It's got a terrific sort of 80s humor to it. I mean, there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek in this. As well as, genuine scary horror stuff. And I think there is so much here to love. I love that everybody in the show kind of has a character arc. You know, everybody, mm-hmm, gets some time on the screen. Everybody's got a story. The show is so well composed. And I know it's just a miniseries, you know, that it's going to be one and done, but oh my word.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They may change their mind
because that, you know, Margo's Got Money Troubles was supposed to be one and done and they've already announced a second season. It did so well. So this may get a second season. I don't know that it should just because it's so darn good, but maybe they do a second season like they did Fargo. It's a different setting each time, but anyway, I just love it. I highly recommend it. You'll have to keep me updated as to where you are. So we can
Yeah, I plan to get caught up on it for sure. I'm excited to finish it. You know, I will say there's me and Jen started watching Dutton Ranch this week, which is the, you know, one of the spinoffs of Yellowstone. There's two of them right now. There's Marshall's, which is not good, and Dutton Ranch, which is supposedly good. Right.
I think that I really enjoyed the first episode. That's the only one I've seen, but I really enjoyed the first episode.
So we're two episodes in. And the one thing that I'll say about Dutton Ranch is that it is very much a better show than Marshall's and much more a season. It is basically the next season of Yellowstone. It very much has that feel, despite the fact that Taylor Sheridan neither writes, directs it. He just produces it, which I find interesting. Like, I guess he's busy doing other things. I thought he would be more involved in this one.
What I read is that he and Cole Hauser are beefing. And
oh, that's true.
He is steering clear of that series because of that. So he's just taking the checks and letting the showrunner do his thing. And I got to tell you, it's better than the last two seasons of Yellowstone. Just by the dent of that one episode, it's better than the last two.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I'd say the one thing that I have, the only gripe, it's not even so much a gripe.
Here we go.
That's what we do, right? Is that even though it is well produced and well acted, it's got, Beth and Rip, and those are pretty much the only returning characters right now. I'm assuming we'll see Jimmy at some point, but we've got a whole slew of new characters played by Annette Bening and Ed Harris and Jay Courtney, who somehow keeps getting jobs. I don't find, and this is funny because the show starts with one, I don't find that it has the same fire or energy as Yellowstone. I think Beth and Rip are very much a team. In lockstep with each other, so the tension between them that was prevalent in Yellowstone isn't there. They're very much like a happy couple, it's them against the world, and I think it loses a little bit there. So I'd say for me the show itself is good, but it very much I'm not feeling the level of I guess for me it feels like it's a show that's happening, but not a show that's like suspenseful or riveting. It's just like, this is cool, like I get to see these characters again, and you know, it's interesting, but I'm not getting like tension out of the show. And maybe it'll build over the season, you know, we're only two episodes in, but I think I'm missing the tension and the fire that was prevalent in at least those early seasons of Yellowstone. This is very much, you know, you mentioned it's better than the last two seasons of Yellowstone. I would agree with that, but I feel like much like the last two seasons of Yellowstone, there's a lot of navel gazing. Mm-hmm. And it feels a little early for that.
It did not feel as navel-gazy to me as the prior seasons of Yellowstone did. I think part of what you might be experiencing, Paul, is the steak. And I'm not talking about beef. I'm talking about, you know, what's it.
Well, that is also prevalent in the show.
But because there's not a lot of family heritage here, you know, we knew from the jump in Yellowstone that the land, the family's legacy was at risk. And that was always just up front, like, you know, crap, we could lose all of this. You don't have that in Dutton Ranch because they just moved there. They just got there. You know, they're the new kids in town. And I think that's part of what you're experiencing is this, you know, we haven't seen the stakes, but I think they're coming. And I think the stakes are going to be liberty. And in that, I feel like Rip is clearly going to get set up for a crime he didn't commit. You know, he disarms a guy in the first episode, and, you know, unwittingly puts his fingerprints on a weapon that was used to murder a guy the night before. That body has been found on the Dutton Ranch. And, you know, this is all going to go sideways for Rip. And of course they don't have the resources and the connections in Texas that they had in Montana, you know, so that's going to be, you know, an issue, right? And I think that's going to that their absence of a security net is going to be interesting. I think, you know, how does Beth pull strings when she doesn't have as many puppets, right?
She killed the family lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be interesting. see. I loved Ed Harris in this. I think
I love Ed Harris in everything.
Yeah, same. Same. And good. I didn't think I was going to enjoy Annette Bening, but I think she is going to shape up to be a good foil for Beth. You know, because Beth's
character. Yeah, I don't like Annette Bening, but I think that's why she's perfectly cast as the villain.
Yeah.
Because I already don't like, I'm just not a fan.
I tend to like Annette Bening, but her character here reminds me of that character she had in the terrorism movie she was in with Denzel. Cannot remember the name of it. Not important. Mm. The only thing that griped me about the show is there is a scene in that first episode where Beth wakes up just drenched in sweat. And I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, she was having a nightmare or something. No. She was just hot because it's Texas. I'm like, you know, we have, why isn't the air conditioning on in her bedroom? You know, and you know, I was waiting to get a bigger look of the house. I'm like, well, maybe this cabin is very primitive, but no, it's a, you know, it's not nearly as opulent as a place on the Yellowstone, but you know,
maybe if thunderstorm came through, knock out electricity to their neighborhood for 3 to 6 months.
I don't think it did, Andrew. And welcome to the podcast, bud.
You can't just show up and dispute. You can't just argue.
Mr. Late Arrival.
I'm a rebel, guys. I'm a bad boy. We all know this.
Yeah. And that's kind of his move lately. Just randomly show up to dispute.
That's right.
Just walk on. Out. Yeah.
It's a cameo. It's a quick cameo.
Yeah.
He's just here for the ratings. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like the great Kazoo in the Flintstones.
I'm digging Denton Ranch. I haven't gotten very far into it, obviously, but I'm digging it.
And you started Spider-Noir. I've been interested, but I haven't checked it out.
I watched the first episode of Spider-Noir last night. I'm going to watch the second episode today. I really enjoyed it. Number one, I'm watching it in black and white, as anyone who's watching a noir should when it's available. Watch it in absolutely. Black and white.
Yes.
It is beautifully shot. Nicolas Cage has a great face for this. I was telling Wayne before we started that, you know, when you're seeing him in the black and white and the very, stark, you know, darks and lights, you know, very chiaroscuro sort of representation on the screen, he's got kind of that Humphrey Bogart sort of, you know, look to him. You can very much imagine Nicolas Cage. He's great for this. I think he's perfect for the part. And I like how it's set up early on. I'm not going to spoil anything because it's so new, but I recommend it, at least off of the first episode. I thought the special effects were really interesting. I liked the setup coming into it. There's a lot of nice darkness, but also a rather Disney-esque sort of ebullience in what the superheroes are doing. You know, with the other powered or other, not normal people are doing in the show. It's kind of fun. I dig it. I like it. So we'll talk more about it in the weeks to come, but check it out. I liked it a lot.
I'm looking forward to watching. I just have not had a chance because I've been traveling this week, but I'm looking forward to checking it out.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Well, those are three things that are just beginning, but today we do want to talk about a finale, the finale of Exquisite Corpses. At least season one, as they're referring to it, came out this past week. And I Andrew, did you read it?
Absolutely. You know, speaking about things that get a second season because they make a lot of money and do really well, like Widow's Bay, here's an example saying that was only, you know, intended for a single arc and is getting more life, more issues, more seasons because it did really well.
Yeah. And not only that, you know, spoilers on, you know, we already know that Exquisite Corpses season two is coming featuring Rascal Randy, but even before then, apparently there's a Rascal Randy miniseries.
I think that
they show at the end of this book as well.
And I'm unclear if it's a series or just a one shot, but yeah, there's going to be a one prequel. Shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's going to be this shot. Prequel Rascal Randy episode. And then, spoils indeed, you know, at the very end, they're like, we can't find one of the bodies. And they're like, what? Well, must have gotten thrown in the burn pile and someone didn't record it. And you see, and the rest.
I thought for sure, based on what we saw in a prior issue with Rascal Randy, that what they were going to find was his empty suit, right?
Right. Yeah.
No, they just couldn't find anything.
Well, it's entirely possible someone took that suit off the person, the actual killer who was wearing it, and is walking off with it.
And that's my thought. I don't think it's going to be the original.
It's a good point.
I think that's one of the reasons you never see the face of the guy in the suit or the person in the suit.
So, again, just to reiterate for the folks at home, we're going to spoil Exquisite Corpses. So you have been warned. I was three issues back this week, and so I started reading Thursday to get caught up. And I got to tell you, I'm so glad I did. I'm glad I read three issues back to back, you know, the final three, because it really got me into a cadence. By the time I got through issue 11, you know, I was racing because, you know, you can just really feel things heating up. I do want to go back and reread it from beginning to end, from issue 1. Issue 13, but such a good series, you know, so interesting. And I like, you know, every time I, you know, one of the early things from in the book was how it defied expectation. Like, you just assumed the lone gunman was gonna carry through all the way to the end, that you see him all the way through the end, and he gets taken out pretty early in the series, and I'm like, well, man, I guess, you know, did I misread how this is going to go? Well, you know, there are elements of him that carry through to the end. But it was just fascinating how they bring it back and, you know, how, you know, the rules are clarified. And I dug that. I dug how I could not predict how the book was going to end because it continued to defy expectations through.
Yeah,
I may be a little confused on what came in issue 12 versus 13, because I read two back to back here, but I really enjoyed not just the reveal of how the rules worked, but that these people don't even know how the rules work anymore. They've lost track of the original rules to their game, and that's what allows people to manipulate the game.
Mm-hmm. As a lifelong gamer, I love the fact that Massachusetts went to New York at one point and was like, well, actually, that's not how the rules work.
Yeah.
Discussion at the game table so many times. Yeah. Just to see it at that level, just it tickled me.
I loved it, and I love the reveal of how the game originally worked, that they had to recruit people to take up their weapons from the town, and if they couldn't, they had to step in and wield the weapons. And that's how Lady Carolina was able to jump in. I mean, I just love that the game has changed over the years and they don't even realize it.
Well, yeah. I felt a little bad for the gameskeeper because everyone in New York is so pissed at him right now.
Yeah. I just very much enjoyed all that backroom chatter while terrible things are happening in town. There was a part of me that thought that the uprising in town by, you know, the civilians was truly going to over, and that's not. And the fact that you essentially had three people who escaped. Now, we're given to understand that not everyone in town was killed, just certain people were killed. And, you know, the town will be rebuilt, yada, yada, with survivors. But I did very much enjoy, you know, how, you know, my expectations were defied throughout. And I thought that it was a very interesting way to build for the follow-up series of books.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the killers are going to be in the follow-up. Because part of what was so good about the series was all of these unique characters and how each one was unique.
Right.
And in this case, I mean, you even got issue 12, the introduction of new killers. So
the new killers, though, with the new killers, at least we had a chance to learn about them as the, you know, in their civilian roles as the show, series went on.
They weren't new characters, but when they pop up Audrey Unleashed, it reminded me of like a fighting game.
There's very much a battle royale feel to this series, for sure.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to mention about it is, you know, obviously we've known since issue one that there was a card game coming, and it is on Kickstarter right now. it has fulfilled its Kickstarter goal. The Kickstarter, if you're listening to this in time, ends, I believe, on June 15th, but it was fully funded in about an hour and a half, 80 minutes of a $50,000 goal. You know, I'm torn. I will tell you guys, I'm torn because I want to get it because I love this property so much. I also don't think I have anyone to play it with, but I might still get it just to have it, just to support these creators and support this creation, because I feel like it's something that, you know, I truly do just, I enjoy everything about this property. I enjoy the characters and I want to see more of it.
You know, did you watch the video of them playing the game?
No,
I have not.
It's a good video to watch. It shows the gameplay pretty easily. It's not a complex game, very simple gameplay, but it's very much a party drinking game. And so a couple times a year, you get together with like, I don't know, 10, 12 people at a friend's house for a weekend to play games. And we do things like Blood on the Clock Tower, things are meant for lots of people. And Exquisite Courses, I think it'll be perfect for that type of venue.
Yeah, 4 to 12 players.
Yeah, the base model, the civilian edition, is $20 to $25. Maybe $20 is the civilian edition. Includes all the cards, the 12 killer cards, the 24 event cards, some status effect cards, and it's just like your standard. But then they have additional editions, like the Killer Cash edition, which contains oversized cards, and then the 13 Families edition, which is like the fancy edition, and then they have one that contains all of them. I'm going to get it, and I need to make my decision by June 15th. I just don't know which one I want.
I went for the medium one because my eyesight's not great. The oversized card sounded nice, but yeah.
The 13 Families. So the medium one, the Killer Cash edition. The 13 Families is the one that I like a lot. I just like the look of it. So yeah. I gotta think about it.
And there are stretch goals, too, that are signed cards and foil cards and all kinds of things like that.
And so, you know, there's, I'm looking at, like, and then there's one that includes all three editions, the civilian edition, the one that you got, Andrew, and then the 13 Families edition, or the Killer Cash. So I'm going to ponder a little bit longer, but I will definitely be contributing, mostly because I want the cards. Like I want to see about the characters and stuff like that. I'm just so interested in this world. I can't wait for season two. I hope that when this eventually does turn into a TV show, I think it was like maybe Netflix or something.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
That they do it. Yeah, that they do it justice. That it's as fun as the comic has been to read.
Well, to that point, I'm very excited they're doing these like either miniseries or prequel one shots because there's a lot of killers I want to know more about. Like I want to know more about Fox Mask Killer specifically.
Same.
Like, right? Same. And there's this whole story between her and Carolina. Yeah. And I'm like, I assume we were going to get a little bit more of that during the series, and we never really did about what was at the core of it.
Yeah. No, I am down for all of that. I think this was a great story. I think it's going to be terrific for Reed. And I'm just thrilled that it's from an indie creator, that this is a creator owned story. And I just want them to reap all from that because I think it's fantastic. So well conceived and executed. And, you know, guys, this book was on time. I don't think we had any delays in Exquisites, did we?
Oh, that's a good
not
point.
Only no delays, there were no.
And they even squeezed
no
in.
No anticipate,
an extra book.
No breaks. Yeah.
Yeah. And they squeezed in an extra book. I mean, it's crazy to me. It's fantastic, and the quality was consistent all the way through. So great stuff. I think this is a huge win.
Agreed. Well, gentlemen, you read a couple of Superman books this week.
As we do,
Superman kind of week. I only read one Superman book, and no one else read it. I read Superman issue 38. You know, the latest in that arc. I quite enjoyed it. It's not my favorite issue, but Dan Moore is just on fire. With the art in this book, which is funny because there's a character named Witchfire in it. You know, I'm just enjoying this. You know, he even refers to it. I'm enjoying the redemption of Superboy Prime. And one of the, I don't want to spoil the ending, but the ending of this book is very exciting to me. And so I'm looking forward to next issue. But that I'm the only one who read that. you guys read a whole slew of other Superman.
So, well, I went back and read Superman Unlimited from last week, Superman Unlimited number 13. I let Wayne down last week, and I owed him, I needed to, remediate the damage I had done to my relationship with from not reading Superman Unlimited number 13 last week. Why did I need to read it, Wayne? Why was it so important that because I read Superman Unlimited number 13?
Because it's a monkey book.
That's right.
That's Befo, right. The super monkey. So I have not
and
read.
Wayne and I are monkey buddies, if you didn't know.
I have not read any Superman Unlimited until this issue. And I jumped in just because the cover had the Monkey of Steel. And so going in, I was confused by some things. I didn't realize that there was both an adult and a child version of Jonathan Kent right now in continuity.
But that is correct.
I mean, just recently, like within the last month or two. So happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were some interesting things around that, trying to figure out. Lois doesn't seem to know about who the adult version is under the mask and some things like that. But I got it for Beppo. And I always love when one of the supporting characters gets the Superman shirt through Bibbo.
Well, I think it's a great team up between Bibbo and Beppo, right? I mean, that's just great stuff. You got to love that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what sends Beppo over the edge.
That's
someone,
right.
Someone shoots Bibbo. You don't shoot Bibbo.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I was disoriented that Beppo is drawn. He looks more like a chimpanzee, but he's got a tail. He's an monkey. But everything about him says chimpanzee.
Yeah.
And I found that really disorienting, that he did not look, because in the other books and in the earlier iteration of the super monkey, he's, clearly a monkey. And this is weird that he's, he looks like a chimp, but he's got a tail.
Well, this version doesn't, he's not from Krypton. He was experimented on.
Right. As you do. By Dabney Donovan, clones of Dabney Donovan, of Cadmus fame. But I liked a lot about this book. I liked the origin of this Beppo. Again, loved the appearance of Bibbo and that he and Bibbo are tight. I like that we're getting to see, and I know that there are folks all over the internet who'll grow when I say this, but I liked getting to see the impact of the trauma on young Jonathan.
Yeah. That boy needs some therapy.
Yeah. And we never really saw that when fully grown Jonathan shows up. He I guess he had already dealt with that.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. Fully grown Jonathan even mentions that in his inner thought bubbles. He's like, I don't remember ever being that messed up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like the child that came forward in time is not the same person as the grown Jonathan. Like maybe he's from a different timeline, which would explain why these two people are able to exist in the same time. But I think it's kind of sad that Tomorrow Man, which is what we're playing Jonathan, who walks around in a mask, is going to, if he's going to preserve the mystery, the secret that he's actually Jonathan Kent, he has to not have any kind of meaningful relationship with his parents or his friends. That seems sad to me.
Yeah, he is a character that has gone through so much and now is basically on his own.
Yeah.
He's lost everything just to be able to protect himself, a younger version of himself.
Yeah. Yeah, I really dug this book, and I'm so glad. I know that you have been sitting out this run of Superman. I'm glad you're on.
Yeah, so I was brought on for Beppo, but I was so captivated by the Tomorrow Man and Young Jonathan story that I'm on for issue 14.
Good, 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 good. Well, you haven't missed much in terms of the Tomorrow Man story. In fact, where they introduced him in issue 11, I think. I did not care for that issue. It came in on the heels of a different story, and boy, I didn't care for that a lot. But issue 12 I think that is correct, is really good. I dug it quite a bit. So
speaking of tomorrow, though, another book that I loved, Superman Father of Tomorrow, number one.
Yeah, I did too. I think that is a really interesting book. That's the one we talked a little bit about last week. Jor-El, the soul survivor of Krypton. He is not able to launch Kal-El. And, you know, so Kal-El and Lara are both left behind as he is, you know, forced to escape Krypton. I think it's a really interesting book.
I'm sure at some point we'll get some more flashbacks to Krypton. But we have seen different versions of Jor-El is the one that comes forward. But I've never seen one like this.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the thing of what makes Superman the character he is, to me, has always been the Kents. And that's what they do right here is when Jor-El crashes, he crashes on the Kent farm and becomes the adopted brother of Jonathan Kent.
Yeah.
I think that adds to the character so much. And he's the one that deals with the, I've got all this power and I can't even save my adopted brother. That's what made me love the book so much is he sounds like Superman. He already sounds like the character that we already know and love, except different because he is an adult scientist versus a child that grew up. But he still had that same, you know, spending time with the Kents on the farm, learning Earth from the Kents. And Sam Lane is just a jerk.
In whatever universe, Sam Lane is a jerk. So the Kents appear to be coded older than Jor-El. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And I only say that because the artwork is somewhat stylized, but I would say they seem older than Jor-El. I was initially wondering if there wasn't going to be a romance between Mrs. Kent and Jor-El after Pa Kent dies in this book. But I don't think that's going to happen now. I ended the book thinking that wasn't going to be a thing. I do wonder, you know, in Superman stories, he is very much shaped by the love of Lois Lane. Lois Lane obviously isn't a contemporary for here. I wonder how that's, what romance, if any, they will present for Jor-El.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was Perry White that gives him his name.
Right. Yeah. I like this book. It seems like a fresh take.
Yeah. And I do think we're going to see he's going to give technology and it's going to go wrong somehow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I entirely expect that. I love the costume, though, too. It is a new and interesting take on the costume, mm-hmm. but it's not just a costume. Him being a scientist, he just keeps making new gadgets.
Well, and we've seen that his desire to give technology, right? And his willingness to deviate from the Kryptonian non-interference policy, right? So you know, you can see that terrible things are going to happen as a result of Jor-El's arrival. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's written by Kenny Porter with art by Danny Earls, and as I said before, really stylized. It took me a little bit to embrace the artwork. Like the heads are a little elongated for the bodies.
Yeah, I struggle with the art on people, but mm-hmm. love his art on technology.
Agreed. I think that his illustration of hardware is really good. I think his framing of spaces, like, you know, there's some nighttime scenes on the Kent farm that are really good. But there is a cartooniness to his life drawing that I think is a little bit of a struggle. I got past it, but I think that, you know, if you're coming into the book, you know, you might want to be aware of that what you see on the cover, you're going to see throughout the rest of the book.
Yeah.
So be aware of that. But I did. I liked it. I think it's worth the read, and I'm in for issue two.
So, Aaron, Exquisite Corpses wasn't the only book that ended this week.
What was the other book that ended this week, Wayne?
Planet of the Apes, Fantastic Four.
So, issue four for Planet of the Apes versus Fantastic Four was the final issue. So, the fourth issue that that's they meant to do something.
Seems a little on the nose, honestly.
It seems a little on the nose. And I, you know, I really enjoyed this series, Wayne.
Same.
But I have to say, was a little underwhelmed with the ending.
Yeah, it kind of, like, everything wraps up so quickly.
Uh-huh.
And they
do... And without a lot of drama.
Yeah, you know? And they do one of the things I hate. They mind wipe pretty much everyone except for mm-hmm. one character.
Yeah.
So none of the apes even remember this ever happened.
Yeah.
It makes you feel like, what's the point of the story?
Yeah, and I mean, already, you know, this is an out-of-continuity story, so there's no reason not to have had a more meaningful, you know? I think you could have had something a whole lot more satisfying. Not like, for instance, I think one thing that is very enjoyable about the ending is that the Red Ghost winds up stuck on Ape Planet.
Yes.
And, you know, is hunted by the apes. You know, where all he wanted was to establish his ape empire. You know, he is now, you know, one of the humans that is being hunted by the apes. And I thought that was great. That's the only thing about the ending. Great. Everything else just seemed like, huh, we're ending. Okay, we're going home now. And, yeah. You know,
it's not even Doom. It's a Doom bot.
Yeah. And well, I mean, it makes sense that it's a Doom bot,
yeah. But
you know, it immediately reduces the stakes. And when, you know, I'm like, but you know, the Fantastic Four can't leave. They can't leave humanity under the jackboot of ape society, right?
Apparently, they can.
And Reed says, you know, I'm going to have to come back here and address this, sir.
You're already here, sir. Can you do something now? You're already here.
How many people are going to have their brains cut up, you know, because, you know, you're going to make time for this later? I was very disappointed in that it's an out of continuity story. Why not address it then? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It felt a lot to me like the old Planet of the Apes comics, mm-hmm. like the old when Marvel had the license.
Yeah.
But like you, I was disappointed by the ending because it felt flat to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything went back to status quo.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't have to do that when you're dealing with alternate realities.
Yeah.
Yep. And what's basically an Elseworlds book, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I mean, and I guess there is one more element that I liked is that, you know, there is an ape that made it across that's sitting in, you know, Doom's prison, you know, so we've got an ape from, you know, Ape Earth, you know, in Latveria under control of Dr. Doom. I think that's interesting. Would have been more interesting if it was, you know, Dr. Zaius or Cornelius or Zira, you know.
Random ape we've never met before.
Correct.
I'm still worried about what Doom's going to do to random ape.
It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good.
Is he going to cut up his brain?
I think Turnabout is fair play, according to Doom.
Mm.
Just saying. So anyway, I was disappointed in this, and whereas I liked every issue up to this. It's hard. It was a hard one.
You know, but guys, I felt the exact same way.
A couple of books I'm really enjoying are issues 1 and 2 of the new Firestorm book. Really strongly recommend. I think Firestorm is a character frequently I find uneven in the writing. Previous iterations felt like he's been a better supporting character than a lead character. But the Fury Firestorm is a new series on... featuring the character. This is the return to the character, the original, not the new 52 character that was launched a couple of years back. And this character is in the same body as Firestorm, but somebody else is there. And Doc Patton sort of to it, where, you know, he is feels rather distant from his humanity. And so, you know, you don't have you had the two identities within Firestorm, you know, the professor and the kid, and neither one of those third intellect. And, you know, so you don't have Ronald Stein was the other guy. You've got this third intellect that we've not identified, and he is very much a Dr. Manhattan, you know, trying to understand humanity and just doing terrible things as he does that. He has like turned everybody in this one city right? Essentially killing everybody in the city, because, you know, he has those abilities to change chemical reactions and, you know, manipulate things at the atomic level. It is really good. It is super creepy, and I have no idea. 2 issues in, highly recommend it. We'll talk more about it when it comes out.
That sounds pretty interesting. That sounds
I like it a lot, and it's beautifully drawn.
So. And it's DC, which means I can pull it up on my Neon Ichiban app.
Good deal. Yeah. Good deal. So, right. Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we get the latest issues of Batman and the newest issue of Event Horizon as well. We have a new Elseworlds book, Supergirl Survive, which is where Kara Zor-El, let's see, it lives a life of small problems. How are you supposed to hold a floppy little baby like her new cousin Cal? Who should she ask to the spring formal? And when will her father and Uncle Zor-El or Jor-El stop squabbling? But the planet Krypton has big problems, like the militaristic dictator Zod ruthlessly crushing dissent and threatening to unleash the planet's most dangerous weapons on the opposition. When Krypton begins to burn, Kara and her infant cousin will find themselves trapped together in a prototype rocket, struggling to survive in a hostile universe that doesn't care if they live or die, and might prefer the latter. It actually sounds like a fun book. Like, maybe, you know, like they don't make it to Earth. This is Kara and baby Cal, you know, crossing the stars, trying to stay alive. You know, maybe like Mando and Grogu. Yeah. So I'm going to check out the art on the first issue and see how it looks. But you know, for those of us who want to relive our childhood, there are a number of new releases next week, including a relaunched for Wayne Mighty Morphin Power Rangers series from Boom Studios, brand new relaunch of the book, set 10 years after the events of the series. We also have Transformers the Movie 40th Anniversary Edition, a reprint of the original movie adaptation from Image Comics, and He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, The Wings of Fate, Issue 1, a brand new comic book set in the universe of the movie that comes out next week and that I will have seen by the next time we podcast.
Look at you! Are Meadow and Murphy excited to go see that movie?
Yeah, they are.
Yes, they are.
Very good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. What do you think about Firestorm? You got to be reading Firestorm, right? What do you think about Exquisite Corpses? Who is your favorite assassin? Let us know. ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. So you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, guys, I'm looking forward to talking to y'all all about all the great content coming out next week. It's going to be a good time, I'm sure. And maybe Andrew will be on time. Otherwise, he better have a hall pass. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, it could happen. It's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible.
Otherwise, we will need to see your papers.
We'll catch you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.